Good afternoon. I'm Ray Graff. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, or should I say drink Friday, because today it's about booze, hooch, joy juice, happy sauce, the devil's vinaigrette. Today we welcome Chris Weld, founder and proprietor of Berkshire Mountain Distillers. And they opened their tasting room in Sheffield, Massachusetts in 2014. They make some great stuff, gin, rum, bourbon. Today will be the tasting room here in Studio A. We've got some samples to taste, and we'll talk about liquor with you. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Chris Weld of Berkshire Mountain Distillers, your booze call's coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and today on the show we welcome Chris Weld, founder and proprietor of Berkshire Mountain Distillers. He is here to talk beer, whiskey, bourbon, whatever else with us. Founded in 2007, Berkshire Mountain Distillers is available in 19 states and has grown to include a wide range of spirits, including Ice Glen Vodka, the very good Greylock Gin, Ethereal Gin, Ragged Mountain Rum, Berkshire Bourbon, New England Corn Whiskey. Chris is fully involved at the distillery, and his current role as proprietor and distiller combines his passions of farming, chemistry, and construction. If you got a question about distilling or drinking in general, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Chris Weld, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I am great, Ray. Thank you for having me. Sorry it's been so long.
It has been a long time, but I want to tell you that there, you know, you have been doing this for how long now at Berkshire Mountain?
Oh, 10, 12, 13 years or so.
How many years? No, at least since the
close to 15 now.
Right. And since then, there have been many distillers popping up. It's not quite maybe as ubiquitous as the craft beer craze was, but there are a lot of distillers out there, and your Berkshire bourbon is still on my top shelf. It's really great stuff, so I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
And the Greylock gin too. It makes a nice, it's a good London style, makes a real nice martini, although, you know, it's not martini season yet, but that's coming. Our number here is 800-348-2551, and I want to talk to you about distilling, but first, I'm reading your bio, and I got to tell you, it's a little odd. You got a master's in emergency medicine, you were a physician's assistant, you were 20-year career as a physician's assistant in San Francisco. How did you get this to be a distiller? What happened?
Oh, the easy answer is that 20 years in the ER drove me to drinking. But I think in truth, you know, distilling sort of an amalgamation of a lot of my passions. So there's a component of working with the land and gardening, and there's a chemistry component. As you mentioned, I've done a lot of construction building throughout the years. And my wife and I had moved from the Bay Area to Massachusetts and bought a farm here that was an apple farm, and took a few years to get the trees back to fruition, and I was ready for a change and thought we'd jump into the distilling world. And it has grown. You know, when I started, there were about 50 of us in the country, and now there are over 2,000 craft distillers registered.
There
are some wonderful ones.
And the thing is, though, the state of the art. In other words, The big houses that make the bourbon down south, they've been doing this for a long, long time, and they've known what they're doing for a long time. A lot of the craft distillers, you know, there is a learning curve there. What are you doing now that has been streamlined since you began prior to 2010?
Nothing.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. Oh. We've updated our fermenters. We've put in, you know, a second and third still. In general, the process is an age old process and has remained the same. And so it's still mashing and fermenting and distilling, and it works pretty much the same. The big guys, as you mentioned, are fully computerized or automated. They can make calls on the distillation from a distant, you know, office. But we're hands on and nose as we distill and make the call as we go. It's funny, I was looking at one of the bigger ones yesterday, and it would take us 1,300 years to make what they make in a year. A little depressing, but...
that's not to put down some of the big ones. There are some tremendous liquor out there.
Clearly, 100 and something years of making whiskey, you certainly have time to learn from your mistakes and fine tune it. And we're still learning from our mistakes and fine tuning things here. So it's a constant process for us, and hopefully we keep putting out better spirits.
They're pretty good. Chris Weld is here from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll get to the calls in a moment. We had an email. Actually, this originally came to the Roundtable panel email box, but it's about distilling, so I figured it's probably for this show. However, if you've ever heard the Roundtable panel, a couple of drinks would definitely help. This is from Brian in Lenox, and Brian says, is home distilling legal? And if so, what advice do you have for making bourbon?
Boy, I'm not going to make friends early on in this one. So unfortunately, the short answer is home distilling is not legal in this country. And I think that, you know, that stems a bit from the Whiskey Rebellion and the federal tax levied against spirits back in the 1790s.
Yeah.
And then there's probably a component of the safety of distilling, and people blow themselves up with home stills or get burnt or burn down their houses. So there is a hazardous component to it. There is a slight risk of distilling the wrong product and leaving too many, you know, pits cracked in a peach or something, and you can get cyanide-type derivatives in it. I think the initial impetus in making it illegal is most likely a revenue-producing one. So, unfortunately, it is not legal to distill a cup of spirits in your house, but you can make beer and wine at home. That does segue into, I mean, I'm happy, and it may help us to spend a couple of minutes just talking about fermentation and distillation.
Yeah, I'd love to do that because you sent an amazing array of things. You brought for the show, or you sent to the show, your beautiful bourbon, the Berkshire bourbon, and Racebrook rye, both of which I've had. And then you have three bottles, and these are small bottles, of American whiskeys that were done with ales. And I want you to go into the process of how that came to be. And you were doing this, if I'm not mistaken, now my memory's pretty bad, but several years ago, before the world ended, you had done this, I think, with Samuel Adams, if I'm not mistaken. Is that wrong?
That is not wrong. And actually, I think I've been in twice since we did this. And these whiskeys have been aging in the barrel for 5 years. So okay. We do have, I think you have a cask finished bourbon there from Otter Creek. And then you've got the Craft Brewers Whiskey Project whiskeys. And it's a little bit confusing. So if we do you have 2 minutes to geek out on science?
I would love to geek out for, like, I'll give you 4 minutes, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Chris Weld is here from Berkshire Mountain Distillers, 800-348-2551. Sir, the floor is yours. Geek away.
Great. I'm not sure I have 4 minutes worth of knowledge to impart here. But so essentially, you know, the first stage is fermentation. And what we're looking for is to utilize yeast to convert sugars to alcohol. They also, a byproduct is heat, and another one is carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the raw material, if it's a grape juice for wines, the sugars are simple sugars. However, in the whiskey world, and whiskey's made from grains, these sugars tend to be caught up in complex starch bonds. So if we're doing a bourbon, and for those interested in making a bourbon, it's 72% corn, 18 rye, 10 barley is our mash bill. So part of that is corn. And in corn, the sugars are in the starch bond. So we cook the corn, we grind the corn, we cook it, and then we add malted grains. And the malted grains have enzymes that break down the starches into simple sugars, which a yeast like. For malted whiskeys like the Craft Brewers Whiskey Project, the malt has inherent enzymes in that grain, and those enzymes will help break down any starches in those malted grains.
Mm.
So the end result is you end up with a porridge that has this carbohydrate rich water in it. And you, that wort, you can strain out. So envision a colander full of rye grains in a pot that you're boiling, and then you just pick the colander up, and what's left behind is the wort that when it's fermented becomes wash or beer or distiller's beer. And then the grains are called druff, and they typically go off to, you know, a food source for animals. So that wort that becomes a wash is how you would make a Scotch whiskey. Normally the grains are smoked and peated. And in the beer, they have hops added. Some of these beers we have now have botanicals in them. And so that wort goes into a wash, 8% alcohol by volume. And then that goes into the still, and the still separates the alcohol off from the wash. And there are different compounds in the alcohol, and they comprise the heads, the hearts, and the tails, and something called esters. And they all have their boiling points. So during distillation, we can decide what parts of that distillate we want to keep, and we would get rid of the first part of the hearts and the last part of the tails. And so then that's what goes into our barrel to age. And there's a great quote that distilling is a science, but blending is an art form. And so we have to decide what cuts on that spirit we want to make to put in the barrel and age. And in the Craft Brewers Whiskey Project, that chemistry is important because we want the genetics of the beer to translate over and, you know, be palatable in the whiskey. But we do want to get rid of some of the bitterness. So we do make a little bit of cuts in that.
You know,
that's done in my 4 minutes.
You've done really well, and we'll take a break in a minute here. I just wanted to tell you that the three that you sent bottles or cans of the Big Elm Brewing 413 Farmhouse, the Spencer Trappist Ale, and the UFO White. And we tasted those, and then we tasted the whiskey that is connected to those. And it's remarkable in that you get a little of the character of those ales in the whiskey. It's a pretty remarkable thing, man. And I noticed that when you did the Sam Adams all those years ago. It's a pretty great idea. We'll take a quick break. Chris Weld is here from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll get to your calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday today, joined by Chris Weld of Berkshire Mountain Distillers. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Before we get to the calls, Chris, any other further geeking need to be done on what you were talking about before the break?
Hours of it. But I think when we delve into the Craft Brewers Whiskey Project, it'll come full circle, so we can...
All right.
Broach that then.
Roger that. Let's go to Rob in East Granby, Connecticut. Rob, you're on.
Hey, gentlemen, Chris, how are you, sir? Hey, I got to tell you, I've had your ales and your whiskeys, and they're delicious, for lack of a better term. Now that you geeked out on whiskey, I'm going to ask you, and then I'll get off because I'm rolling down the road. Can you geek out a little bit on gin? And this time of year, I do prefer whiskeys in the colder months, but, you know, I've got a palate now for gin, and I've changed from, say, Beefeater to Tanqueray. Now I'm stuck on Hendrix, like a gin and tonic. And after you geek out on a gin, what do you consider a good smooth gin for, like, a gin and tonic? And that's my question.
I love Thanks. This. I could talk about gin for a long time too, Rob. So, Chris, you have
Thanks,
the floor.
Joe.
Sure. So that's you put me in a hard spot because obviously the best gin out there is going to be one of ours. But and until I started making our own gin, I was a Hendrix guy. I love gin. My next marketing campaign is going to be gin, not just for summer anymore. It's quite unfortunate. You know, a lot of people have had their quote unquote gin-cident, drinking too much gin in their parents' liquor cabinet or something when they were younger, but it's a really beautiful spirit. I love gin. We make a bunch of gins. We've got a London Dry style gin, which is our Greylock gin. And that London Dry component just means that it's really a juniper forward gin. And there's this component of New Age or American gin that is sort of a catchphrase for gins that have a whole bunch of other things in them. And we make a series called the Ethereal line, and it changes. We're on our 15th one coming out now, but we've made them for Blue Hillstone Barn and MGM and a bunch of other people. And those gins have a little bit of a different formulation on each one, so we change it up a bit. So we're always playing with new gins. We're about to make Ethereal 16 in a couple weeks. And for me, for the gin, I think there is a freshness component to it. I like to see my gins being consumed, you know, within the year, certainly. But they'll hold up for years in a bottle. I think a lot of what comes into the gin in the end is the cuts that we are talking about. So that first part that comes over the still is the heads, and it has a lot of acetone and sort of nail polish removery component to it. And then the tails are super viscous, and those off compounds or off alcohols are called congeners, and they also contribute to a headache. So what I found is a lot of the commercial gins have a little bit more of that in there, and they, you know, a couple of gin and tonics, and they're head crushers for me. So all of our spirits, we make really clean cuts on it. As Ray alluded to before, there are a lot of craft distillers out there now, and the great thing is we're all pushing the envelope, and there's some wonderful apple-based gins and there's some really neat stuff out there to try and play, and I would urge you to support some of the craft guys and try some of the local gins throughout the Hudson Valley and come up and visit us. You know, we always have five or six gins on the shelf, but gin is a beautiful spirit that's, I think, gaining a little traction, which is nice. And it's essentially an aged vodka. You know, you start with a very clean base, and then you distill it with botanicals.
Chris Well joins us from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. I have found, and this might just be subjective, that, you know, if you got a bad whiskey, you could throw some soda in it or whatever. But if you got a bad gin, it is quite obvious. And when the craft distillers began, there weren't that many that actually attempted gin. I think yours was one of the first I recall seeing, and I was amazed that the Greylock gin... You know, I like a martini, and there's really not room for error in a gin when you're making a martini. There's a little vermouth, and that's about it, maybe an olive. But that must require some real trial and error to get that right, because you nailed it.
I think it was about my 50th edition, and it was a eureka moment. Just woke up one day and, you know, thought, oh, my gosh, that's it. And I remember we were going to bottle it the next morning, and I went up in the barn at 5 a.m., which was probably a danger sign, and was tasting the gin just to make sure I was really happy with it. But
yeah,
it took a long time, and I had a lot of input from professionals and consultants and stuff. But, yeah, it is. There's not a lot of wiggle room on a clean gin, for sure.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Chris Well joins us from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. Clark in Postenkill. Clark, you're on.
Okay, very simple question today. Wife is concerned about calories and alcohol, and I'm just wondering if some have less calories than others, or if there's any calories, or what do we know about calories and alcohol?
You're pretty much stuck with it. So, yeah, the nicer the nice, the higher the price. I remember I had some woman in 2 months ago looking for the low-calorie vodka that you could apparently drink all night. And essentially, it's a watered-down vodka. So pure alcohol has a certain amount of calories per fluid ounce, and basically, it's pretty much the same, you know, per ounce across the board. So you're kind of stuck consuming the calories. I think a lot of it is the drinks that it goes into. So probably a clear spirit with a club soda would be the lowest calorie point on that. But unfortunately, there's no magic trick to that. It's got the calories in it built in.
Okay. So what's about the number though? I mean, what does an ounce or ounce and a half of vodka have versus an ounce and a half of tequila?
I don't think there's much of a difference, to be honest with you. I think it's about don't quote me on this. I think it's 90 calories an ounce, maybe.
Okay. I think Chris is now stunned into silence.
Well, that's the number.
I think that's for me, I think it's around 90 to about 90 calories an ounce. But don't quote me on that. It might be now 90 calories an ounce and a half.
Well, Clark, thanks a lot for the call. Chris Well joins us, 800.
But unfortunately, there's no cheating that. The more booze you get, the more calories you're going to get.
Right. And that's as it should be. Chris Well joins us from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jenny is in Stone Ridge. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
You're on.
Can you hear me?
You betcha.
Okay. My question was just what you know about Aquavit. I've fallen in love with an Icelandic brand, and I like it because it's light, and I literally just, you know, pour a shot and put a glass, one cube of ice and sip it.
Aquavit.
Aquavit. It's a Scandinavian, yeah. I guess, and I was told my Iceland version, I guess, is a good beginner one. I don't know. That's what I was told.
All right, I know Aqua Velva very well, but Chris Weld, what do you know about Aquavit?
you're dating yourself.
You betcha.
So I think Aquavit is distilled, you know, it's a neutral spirit-based thing, and I think most of it was from Scandinavia. And it's basically grain or potatoes, but it's distilled, it's made from a high-proof spirit that's distilled, and I believe it's there's dill and like caraway in it, I believe. So there's a little bit of flavoring, sort of like a gin. There are some newer ones on the market. I think we have not made one yet. And I don't know exactly what proof they come at. Is yours pretty hot?
Jenny?
Sorry, I missed one thing you said. I didn't hear that before hot.
So they typically are, you know, flavored
With
I think it's
caraway.
You know,
that's
sort of like a gin, a caraway seed, a dill, you know, star anise or something like that. So sort of like a lighter gin, but made from a neutral grain spirit. So when we talked about the distilling, if you distill to a high proof of about 190 proof, it makes you take out all of those congeners and you end up with a very clean spirit. So the heads and the tails that we talked about aren't quite as present, and so it's a little bit kinder on your head the next morning, I would think.
Jenny, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Chris Weld of Berkshire Mountain Distillers is here on this Food Friday. Nick is in Massachusetts. Nick, you're on.
Yes, can you talk about the difference or the similarities between cordials, brandies, and liqueurs? And do you make any of those products at your distillery?
Chris, did you catch that?
So cordials, brandies, and liqueurs. So we do a brandy. We do an eau de vie, which is basically an unaged pear brandy, and we'll be releasing another round of that soon. The liqueurs tend to be very high in sugars, and we don't make any of those, and we don't make any of the cordials. Either, I hate to say, how's that for not? But just, you know, that's another sweet thing that's flavored, and cordials, I think, typically are drunk after a meal. So what makes it postprandial cordial or a liqueur with it, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you.
All right,
having not made those yet.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Sorry.
Chris Well joins us. This email from Jacob in Cohoes. Jacob writes, I've heard of people aging bourbon with cherries and cucumbers and vodka, and it was amazing to taste. Do you have any other recommendations for fruits or veggies or herbs in bourbon? And that's from Jacob in Cohoes. That sounds like sacrilege to me, but okay.
Yeah, so what did he come up with? Cherries and cucumbers?
Cucumber vodka and cherries, but he wants to know if there's anything in bourbon that you can do.
Yeah, there's been a history of apples, people aging apples in bourbon. I would also try some good dried Italian plums, I think would come over pretty well. So we do, one of the projects we do, which is the cask finished bourbon series, which where you have a bottle on your desk.
Indeed.
We will take barrels that beer has been aged in, and often those beer barrels, like the Sam Adams Utopias, has maple syrup in it, and they've got one where they did a bunch of cherries in it. And so we age our bourbon gets finished in those barrels, and it takes on the nuance of what was in that barrel. So I would say that, you know, the darker fruits would be great, but there is a good history of apples, and I try and find a later season apple rather than a kind of early season eating apple. And the big issue with home aging of spirits is that often it's in small barrels and you pull up so much tannin from the wood in that aging process that it really kind of wrecks the spirit. So just be very careful on the aging. You may want to try it in a glass jar or something so you don't, you know, bring in a lot of tannins into the spirit.
Chris Well joins us from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. One interesting flavor that we found, my wife and I found a couple of weeks ago in the liquor store in town, was banana bourbon. And it's, I forget the brand, but it was very strong on the banana. It was about 80 proof, very light, but we made a drink, and it's not bad, but you can't use very much of the stuff because it's so banana heavy. We took three parts ginger limeade, one part straight bourbon, I think we used larceny, and one part this banana bourbon. And it wasn't bad. Very nice, light little drink. But have you ever heard bananas in bourbon before?
I haven't heard bananas in the spirit, but there's a chemical that comes off in aging that often has a component of banana to it. So is this actual bananas that were put in, or was it the chemical?
No, I believe it's got actual, I don't know how they distilled it or made it or aged it, but yes, there was legit banana in it.
Yeah, they probably soaked it in there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But there is some stuff that comes out of the wood that tastes a bit like banana. And actually, somebody this morning tasted it in that Spencer whiskey you have.
Oh, very interesting. That I did not catch. In fact, let's talk about that for a minute. Chris Weld is here from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. We'll get back to your calls after the break here at 800-348-2551. A couple of emails as well. But before the break, let's talk a little bit more in depth of the Craft Brewers Whiskey Project, and specifically the beers that came paired with the whiskeys today. Now, the first one was Big Elm Brewing 413 Farmhouse Ale, which is just a lovely straight-ahead ale. And then how did that become an American whiskey?
Sure. So there are 12 brewers and 12 beers in this project, and subsequently 12 whiskeys. And they're being released in sets of three. So the first three that came out a month ago are, as you mentioned, the Big Elm 413, which is their classic Belgian farmhouse ale. And basically, it was a bottle-ready beer. So that ale, you know, 413, is named after our local area code here in the Berkshires. They've got Turner Hill Malting, which is local, local hops. And it's just a wonderful, nice beer. And so we would take that beer and distill it three different times. So it's pot distilled, and it gets distilled three times. And during that distillation process, we would make the cuts that we felt appropriate. So remember, there are some of those off alcohols that are inherent in any fermentation. And when you do the distillation, you're actually able to cut out parts of those bitter parts. So we would cut out the parts that were great in a beer, but when they got concentrated tenfold, we wanted to downplay. And then that whiskey or that spirit went into barrels. And in this case, all of these have been aging for 5 years and they got pulled out.
You know, keep going.
So the first three were the 413 Big Elm. And then there is the Spencer Trappist Ale, which is out in Spencer near Framingham. Made at a Trappist monastery. There are only, you know, a little over a dozen in the world.
And it's a great beer too.
Licensed. Yeah, only one licensed in the U.S. And this one doesn't have, I don't believe, any botanicals to it. So it gets its fruity component, you know, just from the yeast strain, the malts they use, and the hops. But yes, a great beer. And then UFO White. So UFO is, you know, with the flagship beer of, it's actually Mass Bay Brewing. But everyone thinks of it as Harpoon, and it's also just a wonderful Belgian style, you know, as they say, merging the tradition of spiced wheat beers brewed in a Belgian with modern American craft ingenuity.
Right.
So it's another great beer. That the 413 has orange and chamomile, and the Belgium has some orange on it as well, and coriander. And the genetics of the beer really translate over into the whiskey, which is pretty neat.
Chris Weld is here. We have to take a break in a minute, but I just wanted to ask you about the aging duration. Now, you say these Craft Brewers Whiskey Project, they're 5 years aged. I think the limit is, the lower limit is 3 for a bourbon, correct?
Well, the lower limit is 2 for a straight bourbon. If you don't want to have an age statement on the bottle, it has to be 4 years old. But there's something called the Beverage Alcohol Manual, and it's there are people who are putting out, as you know, a baby bourbon that is 3 months old and still calling it a bourbon. So if you want to call it a straight whiskey or straight bourbon, remember that all bourbons are whiskey, but not all whiskeys are bourbon. A straight bourbon is 2 years.
Interesting. And so if I don't see an age designation on a bottle that I buy at the store, it is at least 4 years. Is that what you're saying?
Should be 4 years old.
Interesting. Did not know that. Chris Weld is our guest. We'll get back to your calls and your emails in a moment. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Liquor, booze, the good stuff with Chris Weld from Berkshire Mountain Distillers today. This email came, oh gosh, this one came in from Ted. I don't know how you answer this one. Ted in Slingerlands writes, "We accidentally bought Jack Daniels, which had honey in it. It's disgusting. Why do they add items like this to a whiskey?" And that's from Ted. Well, what do you say to that, Chris?
I don't know what to say to that. So, I think that, I don't know what to say to that.
All right. Well, you know, you can plead the fifth. It's okay. It's all right.
Listen, if I say any bad thing that like, those guys, as I said, people like that make over 1,000 times what we make in a year.
Yeah. Okay.
I think there's a very fine balance. And so for instance, we have a bourbon that we dump our bourbon out. We fill the barrel with maple syrup, let it sit for a couple months, dump that out. We sell the bourbon the bourbon flavored maple syrup. And then there's a coating of the syrup in the barrel, and we'll fill the whole barrel with aged bourbon and let it sit in there for a bit. So we have this bourbon that's maple finished in that barrel, and it's just got a tinge of sweetness. So,
right. Not overpowering.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably overpowering, or also there's a lot of, honey doesn't have to be what we think of as honey either. So I don't know. I have no idea.
All right. Well, I'm going to leave that alone. By the way, one of the most interesting ones that we found, one of our favorite liquor stores over in Slingerlands was a George Dickel whiskey that was finished in a Tabasco barrel. Have you tried that?
I have not had that one. Is it good?
Really good. Surprisingly great. This email from Joel in Blooming Grove. Is it true that only whiskey made in Kentucky can legally be called bourbon?
No. So a very common misconception, but bourbon is proprietary to the U.S. So as long as you're in a U.S. territory, you can make a whiskey and call it bourbon. So bourbon does have to abide by the criterion in the Beverage Alcohol Manual, which is, at least 51% corn, depending how you interpret it, not more than 80%. The other grains can be rye or barley or wheat. Wheat being a, softer, sweeter bourbon, and rye being a bit spicier. And then it also has to age in a virgin American white oak barrel that's charred.
Mm. And aren't a lot of those barrels then sent to Scotland?
So most of those barrels are sent to either Scotland or the Caribbean for rum, or Mexico for tequila. And we actually, you talk about the Tabasco barrel. We have port barrels, and we've got a tequila barrel that we're aging, finishing bourbon in now. And But yes, they typically get reused. We had a whiskey called Smokin' Pete where we got barrels back from Ardbeg and Laphroaig.
Oh.
They're 10-year-old scotch that, you know, bourbon barrels went over there, got aged, and then they came back and we finished some bourbon in there. We called it Smokin' Pete, and it was pretty spectacular.
Mm. We have to get back to the phones here, but one thing, you had mentioned bourbon being an American thing, as long as it's made here and made with 51% or more of the corn, right? But in Scotland, you can only make scotch in Scotland, right? We see a lot of craft distillers making single malts now. Are you thinking about doing anything like that?
We have some single malts. Essentially, this whole craft versus whiskey project is single malt as well, or malted whiskey. And yeah, we do have a couple single malts in the barrel, some that were smoked and peated and some that weren't and that are aging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard being the small guy. We're always trying to be relevant and come up with new things. And the Craft Brewers Whiskey Project with these 12 new whiskeys was a big endeavor for us.
Yeah.
So, single malts are probably a couple years out before it's coming out of the barrel.
All right, let's go to Tom in Saratoga. Tom, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
So, the gentleman who was calling in, can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Zach the engineer is holding his head and he's tired of my shenanigans. Yes, we can hear you very well, Tom.
Great, great. Okay, so the gentleman was calling in about the caloric value of alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, so alcohol, the ethanol molecule has 7 calories per gram.
Oh.
A protein and carbohydrate is 4, and fats are 9. So it kind of right in the middle, but the caloric value is actually inherent in, like you were saying, in the molecule. So you look at the proof of the alcohol and figure out how much is in, you know, what percentage is alcohol, and then you can figure out what the caloric value is. I didn't look up what that would be for like an 80 proof, but I think you're right, it's about 90 for a shot.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, you know, I did look it up afterwards, and so 40%, which is 80 proof, is 64 calories per ounce, and a shot typically is an ounce and a half, so that'd be 96 calories.
Perfect. You were right on the money, Arnold.
And there's no free lunch on this. If you, unfortunately, if you water it down, it's just you got to drink more to have the same effect.
David in Wordsboro. David, you're on.
Oh, that's me. Hey, hi, guys. I got a batch. I got a small... copper kettle that I do in fact
that you're not distilling anything on at home.
That's right?
Right.
You're not doing that, David, but you can talk hypothetically.
So hypothetically, purely hypothetically,
if I were to be doing that sort of thing, if I had a batch of beets and maybe some potatoes in there that's been sitting around for, I don't know, let's say maybe 2 or 3 months. And it's got this sort of white film across the top of it. Can I still use that?
Yikes.
I wouldn't. It's really hard to salvage a bad wash or fermented material into a good distillate. You know, there's a lot of funky things down in the islands.
Okay, so once you get the film over the top,
it's probably had a secondary.
Go ahead, Chris.
Toss it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Probably toss it. It's probably gone through secondary fermentation and probably has some weird bacterial contamination. There are distillers, particularly down in the islands, that do that intentionally. But they have, you know, their distilleries are just covered with those bacteria or yeast strains, and so they know what they're going to get. And so some of these distilleries produce very high ester rums that are used in flavorings and ice creams and stuff. But if it's in your basement, I don't think it's worth the risk. If you got something funky in there and you concentrated whatever it was in a distillate that was a heat-stable toxin, it's just probably not worth it.
And, you know, you really can't recommend that he do anything with it. It's not he's not supposed to do that. This is from Ben in Schenectady, and this is a good email, and then we'll go back to the phones. Early in the show, somebody was wondering what some good gins are. There is an ethereal gin subnamed Stormy. and it is the best gin in the world. Will Berkshire Mountain ever re-release it? And that is from Ben in Schenectady.
Ah, Ben, thank you. So we do have a stormy out again. I will tell you what happened with that. We had we're very fastidious in trying to reproduce Greylock exactly the same every batch, and it's been 15 years of making it. And we had one batch, and we believe that probably the botanicals were sourced from a different place when they were shipped to us, and it just wasn't quite our Greylock gin.
Yeah.
And, you know, you probably wouldn't have noticed it if you had a martini in one bar and drove 5 miles and had it again, but when we taste them back to back, we picked it up at the distillery. So we redistilled that with a ton of botanicals, so many so that alcohol as a solvent wasn't able to absorb the oils, and it was really cloudy for a month or so. And so we called it Stormy, and we did recreate it to the best of our abilities, and it should be on the shelf in the store now.
Well, what an interesting concept, but this is not one that you would make a martini with, right?
You could. I think all of our gins are martini-worthy, but that's, you know, I'm biased.
Fair enough. Let's go to Nancy in North Adams. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I think I turned my radio down so when I called in, so somebody might have already had a question about cordial liqueurs.
Yeah.
Because as you came on the air, I heard the tail end of your answer, but I didn't hear what the question was. So my question was what's the difference between the cordial and liqueur?
I think cordials are after dinner, and I'm not entirely – I could look it up, to be honest
okay.
with you.
We don't make either
of those, and it's –
All right.
It sounds awful, but I'm not. But we don't make either of those at the moment.
But I have something for Ray in his banana flavored bourbon.
Yeah. What do you got?
I went to Jamaica, and one of the drinks down there is called a hummingbird.
Yeah.
And it's banana liquor, banana based. So look that one up, and maybe you can make a hummingbird out of banana flavored bourbon instead of what they use down there.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, Nancy, I'm a little pleased that the banana bourbon is now extinguished because I may not buy it again.
Oh, okay.
It's a little, you know,
and I'm a bourbon drinker.
So, yeah.
Bourbon and Branch.
Why sully it with banana? But thank you for the call very much. And let's go to Adam in Poughkeepsie. Adam, you're on.
Hi. So my question is less about drinking and more about using. My question is about denatured alcohol. And I make shellac for finishing bowls with denatured alcohol, but I've always been suspect of the chemical that's put in alcohol to denature it. And then I wondered if a craft brewer ever has something that's wouldn't be good for drinking, but would be good in my application. So it has to be about 190 proof.
The and you can get away with 190?
Yes.
So I think the guideline for what denaturing entails are variable. So for instance, we did a hand sanitizer for a little bit, and we could denature the alcohol with a Bitrex solution. A lot of the stuff that you would find at the hardware store, right? I mean, one of the issues, and this goes back towards, you know, the taxation on whiskey, is that ethanol is pretty cheap to produce for those big, massive industrial outfits. And, you know, they put it in our gas and stuff. So the feds get taxed on all this alcohol. And when they denature it, it's so that people won't, a lot of it's perfectly potable alcohol in the hardware store, but they denature it so people won't drink it, and then the feds don't get their tax.
Oh.
But some of it is purely toxic and kills people, and some of it, like the Bitrex, is horribly bitter and people won't drink it. But the most distilleries who make a vodka or a gin base will be able to distill up to 190. The problem is you can't buy it from them. So the best way is going to be, if you're worried about the chemicals in it, and I get it, if you're working with it, I would be too. You could go to, can you buy grain alcohol in New York State? I know you can in Connecticut.
I really
don't know. You can buy 190.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then there are also pharmaceutical companies that will ship you basically anhydrous alcohol at 200 proof. So you could go one of those routes.
All right, Adam, thank you very much. That was an interesting one. Let's go to Paul in Altamont. Paul.
Hi, good afternoon. Great show.
Thanks.
I want to make a quick note about Japanese whiskey. I was lucky enough to visit my daughter in Japan more than one occasion, and twice I got to visit the Hakushu distillery, and it was the best $10 80-minute tour you would ever take. It was just fantastic. Now, in the Scotch style, we can't call it Scotch whiskey, but I have to say that when the Japanese do something, they do it right. They certainly can find a finer whiskey. So if you ever have an opportunity, I'll move on. If you want to comment, please do. But I'll move on. My question to you, more vocal, is I love rye whiskey, and it's not that easy to find. It's certainly easy enough to find, but I've actually been in liquor stores where they say Canadian, and I say no. Bourbon gets all the attention, but rye is the thing. There's so much good going on with rye, and it's just passing so many.
Yeah, it's very popular now. The Berkshire Mountain Distillers Racebrook Rye is excellent stuff. Chris, why don't you, we only have a couple of minutes here. Why don't you talk about rye a little bit? We haven't touched that yet.
Sure. So let me just say, I agree. Some wonderful whiskeys coming out of Japan nowadays. Rye had a pretty decent resurgence maybe half a decade ago or so. That was one of the original big spirits made. A lot of it made down in Pennsylvania era. In the early, 1920s to late 1800s. And recently it's come back a bit, certainly a little bit spicier than the bourbon. And I think that's what turned some people off on it for a while. The American palate went with a sweeter bourbon. And also rye needs to age long enough so that it mellows in the barrel. When I started 15 years ago, it was next to impossible to get locally grown rye. And so, that was made it difficult to make a local rye. And since then, we have growers that are local to us, and there's certainly some in the Hudson Valley. And New York Craft Distillers, I think, had a guild that did something with a New York-grown rye as well. So you may want to look around a bit more. I think things have changed a bit recently, and hopefully more rye is coming of age in the barrel.
Paul, thank you very much. We zip over to Sheffield. And Jack, you have about 30 seconds here.
Okay, I'll be quick. You were talking about gin before. There's a terrific gin called Heyman's Old Tom Gin.
Yeah, I've had that.
Gillis Martinis. I'm wondering if Chris knows why Old Tom is different from London Dry Gin or just a straight Beefeater or whatever.
So the Old Tom Gin, I believe has a little bit of a sweetness to it. A little bit sweeter tasting than that. A little bit drier than the Genever gins, but I think it's got a tiny bit of sweetness to it.
I think you're right.
I don't know if it's added in there, but definitely has a component, a little sweeter taste than the London Dry to it.
Jack, thanks a lot. Now, we only have about 30 seconds here, Chris. What's going to be happening soon at Berkshire Mountain Distillers you want to tell us about?
Sure. So come to Sheffield, visit us. We've got the Three Craft Brewers Whiskey Project whiskeys out there. Big Elm, the 4131, is only available at the distillery now. The other two are available in Massachusetts. CraftBrewersWhiskeyProject.com, and you can check out the releases. The next three in the spring will be Sam Adams, Jack's Abbey, and Berkshire Brewing.
Cool.
In summer will be Smutty Nose, Oma Gang, and Captain Lawrence, and those two will be in New York, and then Long Trail, Chatham, which will be in New York, and Two Roads. Tastings on the weekends, open 7 days a week, distillery, winery, brewery, and dispensary in Sheffield now.
What's your website?
BerkshireMountainDistillers.com and CraftBrewersWhiskeyProject.com.
You know, Jim Lavoulis in the newsroom would really appreciate it if you could do one with Labatt's Blue. But that's another story. Hey, Chris Weld, thanks for being here, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Support comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, Saturdays 9 to 2 in Lansingburg, with orders online for Sunday pickups. Now on Sundays with the Make It Upstate Marketplace, troymarket.org. Once again, thanks to Chris Weld of Berkshire Mountain Distillers for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Barb King, who screened the calls. Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. That's it for this week on Vox Pop. You made it through another week. It wasn't that bad, was it? Was it? It was, all right. Zach says maybe it was. All right. We'll see you Monday at 2 p.m. Have a great weekend.